Iowa Soybean Association is driven to deliver for Iowa's 40,000 soybean farmers. We're proud to provide objective agronomic research, a helping hand with soil and water stewardship, and timely industry news powered by the Soybean Checkoff. Learn more at iasoybeans.com.
Hi, everybody. It's Paul Yeager. This is the MTOM Show podcast, a production of Iowa PBS and the Market to Market TV show. New episodes come out each and every Tuesday. We like how you have subscribed or that you have found us. We are both in audio form and video form. So if you want to subscribe via the YouTube channel, you can watch these discussions. Or if you're a traditionalist podcast listener, the audio is always available for you. Today, we are revisiting with a guest on a topic that doesn't go away. In fact, we're probably coming up to the peak. We're talking fertilizer. Josh Linville of StoneX is our guest. We've had him on before to kind of get some of his background, but we're going to find out what products he's tracking the most in the sense of where's the volatility, where is the stability, and what does the market look like ahead in some of the big fertilizers? Also, we're going to find out some areas that you need to watch where weather stories happen and how that impacts fertilizer and not just in your backyard. We'll talk about that. And of course, at the end of this discussion, or maybe early, we're going to get into a very important regional topic. If you have any feedback for me, paul.yeager@iowapbs.org is the email. Send me a note. Tell me what you want to hear. Russ is always good about saying, hey, I like this. I don't like that. I also hear from Jeff. Thank you very much, you two, for your regular contributions. Join the discussion, and we might just read your comment here on the podcast. Now, let's get to Josh Linville and talk fertilizer. I guess the first way to say this is your job. I mean, COVID changed everybody's world. COVID didn't necessarily change your job, but the last 2 to 3 years have been off the charts, or am I being too general and too flippant about the world of fertilizer?
No, you're being absolutely right. It's not only did we have to learn how to stay on top of things, you know, talk more electronically rather than being next to each other, things like that. The fertilizer industry, for example, was going through an unprecedented amount of volatility, price hikes, things like that. I mean, I've got PowerPoints where my presentation, literally the first couple, are nothing more than just listing out all the black swan events that happened throughout the marketplace during that time. So, yeah, it was, you could say it was a little bit of a stressful time in the fertilizer industry.
And when you say black swan events, that it almost is we've almost become desensitized to the phrase because so many things have happened. If you had to say just three, Josh, that have been the biggest of the big in your world, in your seat, what have they been?
I would say the leading one was the Russian invasion of Ukraine, which a lot of people sit there and say, oh, well, that must have really hurt Ukrainian fertilizer exports. And that's not the case because Ukraine is not a major exporter of fertilizer. What happened, it was a secondary event. Russia upset with Europe, but first on the Nord Stream pipeline situation, and of course their support of Ukraine, stopped shipping natural gas to Europe. European Dutch TTF values started to skyrocket. All of a sudden then we had, you know, the price of the input was so high, they could not make nitrogen fertilizer and it disrupted global supplies. That to me is the single biggest event just because it wasn't a direct fertilizer situation. It was one of those secondary events that had a major impact on the fertilizer markets. Second one is starting to see a lot of the governments during the height of the pricing around the world, governments stepping in and saying, you will not export. We saw it by multiple. The biggest impact on the world market was China. During the height of it, they sat there and said, listen, we produce a lot of phosphate. We produce a lot of urea. We're going to keep it home because that keeps enough for our own farmers and it keeps our prices down. To me, those are the two biggest single events that have happened over the last 2 years. By far not anywhere close to the big list. Like you had mentioned, there were so many of them. You just get to the point, it's like, okay, what's more unique than a black swan? You start looking for that next thing.
I go back to a discussion we had on Market to Market, and I'm pretty sure it was October of 21. Matt Bennett sat there in the chair and said, before we aired, he goes, hey, I'm going to talk about fertilizer. I had a conversation with someone. And I set him up and I said, Matt, what are you hearing about fertilizer? He says, you better be booking it now. And that was 21 was before the invasion of Russia. So what Was that all still tied to derecho at that point, or just still kind of a COVID tale?
At that point, it was actually a little bit of fear that was starting to get ramped up. And a lot of the world marketplace, when you look back, global and here as well as the rest of the world, we topped out on most of our prices. It was early April 2022. So obviously, to his point, he was absolutely correct. October all the way through to April was this huge lead up, this huge rally in prices across the board. One of the major events was the fear of losing Russia exports. Like I said, Ukraine isn't a major exporter. Russia is. And what happened when they finally, I mean, for a while we sat there and speculated, will they invade? Will they not? Are they just jockeying for position? Well, then they actually invaded. Starbucks pulled companies out. McDonald's pulled companies out. When those two won't sell you coffee or hamburgers, you know you've done something really, really wrong. Banks around the world started to say, if you're doing business with Russia, we will not bankroll you. And so while the Ukrainian side wasn't as big of a deal from a strict fertilizer standpoint, Russia was, and we were very, very scared that we were going to lose Russian exports, phosphates, potash, nitrogen. Fortunately, we found out that wasn't the case. Russia continued to blow and go, but there was a period there when we truly thought we were going to lose one of the leading world exporters of all fertilizers.
So now, Josh, we sit here and look at the market and say, okay, we still have Russia trying to invade Ukraine, still there. That issue hasn't gone away. China's having, whether it's an up or down economy, you pick what service you want to believe. And we've seen a relaxation in most of the fertilizer prices.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
We have normalized a lot of the situations. To your point, the Russian stoppage of natural gas flows to Europe. At first, that was a major event. Oh my gosh, what are we going to do? We're going into winter. There's not enough supplies. We saw that Dutch TTF go from $4, $5, $6 in MMBTU to $103. Today, $15, $16. Are we back to absolute normal? Absolutely not, because the world is still messed up. But we're not back at that high end because we figured out normal. We figured out imports and exports and things like that. An open and free market finds a way. Eventually, there's always going to be a little bit of a scary period there where all of a sudden everybody's like, oh my gosh, I don't know what's going to happen. And fear generally drives prices higher. But as we start to figure it out, and that's what's happened around the world, we figured out, oh my gosh, we thought we were losing Russia. We didn't lose Russia. Oh my gosh, Europe will never turn their nitrogen production back on. About 75-85% of their production is now online. So all these events that we're scared of, we figured out.
But did we also use less product?
To a certain extent, yes. High prices cure high prices. Demand always ends up having its say in the S&D, right? So yeah, there's a little bit of a scaling back, but ultimately, this seems as though it was more of a rationale of the new world, to me at least.
Do you anticipate, or did you anticipate, that that price alone would reduce some of the demand on limited supply?
Yes, at least on the phosphate and the potash side of the marketplaces. Now, nitrogen, when you start to look at it, is a very fixed rate, right? If you want to graze X number of bushels of corn, for example, you have to have a certain amount of nitrogen there. You can't scale back the nitrogen without hurting that that overall yield potential. Now, phosphate, potash, you can mine that soil. You can reduce your application rate. You can, you know, delay it. If you're a fall applicator, you can wait till winter. You can wait till spring. It's actually something I talked to my dad. As we were going into that 21 period, into 22 and beyond, I sat there and said, listen, we need to look at these a little bit differently. We need to look at changing practices if we can. So did the soil test, did those things. This last fall, I said, if we can wait, I know you like going in the fall, but if you can wait until winter, if you're comfortable with that, I think there'll be a better situation. Luckily, it played out, and Christmas was a little bit easier this year.
Well, I know you're not totally in the business of, I guess, answering the question you just did there at the family discussion, but did you get the sense people were locking in or not locking in prices like they used to? Had they changed habits?
They had changed habits during that time. And we had seen several examples of that. The supply chain, your distributors, your retailers, we're looking at the high price. And most of us were around for 2008 and 2012, the last time we saw these super cycles, if you will. We remember the pain to the backside, and we were looking at those numbers saying, this is not comfortable. So they were much more conservative on their buying patterns. Same thing on the farmer side. I don't like these prices. They don't quite make sense. I'm going to hold off a little bit longer. So it was a much more conservative and delayed reaction to the marketplace.
Okay, so is the top slide in your presentation about the Black Swan events?
It was.
So what's it now?
Now it is, the worst of it is behind us. The worst of the high prices seem to be behind us. Of course, we can always repeat it, and we always got to watch for that. But it looks like that cycle, for example, is done. Just because we've put the high prices behind us does not mean volatility does not still exist. And that's one of the things people sit there and say, oh, you know, phosphate was $1,000 a ton, and now it's, you know, $500-$600 a ton. Oh, we're not going to see any volatility. That's not the case. We're going to continue. These are commodities. Prices move up and they move down. So don't think that just because we've gone down, it's going to flatline. There will still be events driving these markets. Don't get lackadaisical.
So what's going to be the big driver now then on the volatility?
Well, right now, it depends on the market. When we look at nitrogen, a lot of it is centering around China again. The government continues to sit there and step into the export market, making dictations. You can do this. You can't do this. Right now, the big fear of the world is the government came out and said, we need to fill Chinese warehouses first. We are going to stop exports. Well, then we started to find out it wasn't exports to the rest of the world. It was exports to India. They're really zeroing in and saying, we're going to slow down going to India. So that's disrupting global supplies, global trade. On the phosphate, it is dodging two bullets. You know, that major hurricane that went up through the Gulf of Mexico and went just north of Tampa, that thing missed a lot of phosphate production by a hair. And then the earthquake in Morocco, right? The huge devastating effect on the population. Fortunately, the phosphate production kept on churning along. So it's missed two major bullets, but still dealing with very, very tight supplies here in the U.S. Countervailing duties are keeping three of the world's largest global exporters from accessing our country.
If I remember correctly, Josh, you've more than two decades of doing this with fertilizer.
Yeah, it's the hairline's starting to show it.
I wasn't trying to call that out. Come on.
Good. This is experience. This is good.
Exactly.
No, I started back in, it would have been spring of 2002. I actually started my last year of college. I had Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday classes. So I would drive to Kansas City and work Thursday, Friday. But yeah, I started full time. I believe it was May of 2002 and ever since.
And the reason I asked that is to set up this question. So in those decades, we'll just do it kindly that way. In those decades, has fertilizer always been global like this?
Yes, but it has been much more quiet. When I first started in the industry, we were just getting off of a cycle where a truckload of potash coming from Carlsbad, New Mexico, the cost of freight was just as much as the cost of the product. And if a price moved $3-$5 a ton, that was a major event. I mean, I had people that were upset with me that I didn't give them a heads up that this was coming. Now, if I called up somebody and said, hey, the price is moving $5 a ton, they'd be like, dude, I've got stuff to do. Why are you bugging me right now? I mean, we had, when India last tendered this most recent, this time, the price of global urea went up $100 a ton almost overnight.
So the end user, to an extent, is just, I guess, immune, numb to these swings now?
I think so. And the end user, the farmer doesn't typically see the swings nearly as much as the retailer, nearly as much as a trader, because those prices move much, much more slowly. I always compare it to lumber prices when they skyrocketed and go into Lowe's or Home Depot. You show up. Now, when the price of replacement lumber went up, boy, that price was up immediately at the stores. But what happened when all of a sudden we started to see the price of lumber futures drop? Well, that was real sticky. They wanted to get rid of that high price. So the further down the supply chain that you get, the little bit less of the day-to-day volatility, this and this. It's smoothed out a little bit more the further down the chain you get.
You mentioned New Mexico, and you mentioned the weather in Florida. How much domestically has fertilizer production, distribution helped or hurt this discussion?
It has helped. It has been a steady situation. That is not to sit there and say that there haven't been some production hiccups, issues, things like that. But when you look at it, we have not had near the disruptions that a lot of other global major manufacturing points have had around the world. It has been steady.
Where have those growth spots or stabilizations been?
In terms of the U.S.?
Yeah, in the U.S., sorry.
It's, you know, we've got a major phosphate production that sits up in the northwest of the country. Obviously, the majority of the production is sitting down in Florida. Both of those just continue to churn lives as if there's no issues. Nitrogen plants throughout the Midwest continue to roll along. Now, there are, you know, plant downtime to make repairs. It's a very high temperature, high stress situation on the equipment, so they have to make repairs. But for the most part, given the margins that they're making, they're running as hard as they possibly can without actually breaking the equipment.
We are recording this, and I would call it the middle of hurricane season. We're approaching some pretty tough times ahead. Is that still a major volatility causer?
It is a, I liken it, I always like to say, it is a low probability, high impact situation. And the reason for that is you've got two major points that I watch when it comes to hurricanes, and they're both in the Gulf of Mexico. Number one is the one that we just missed, that hurricane that went just north of Tampa Bay. Now, I wasn't overly concerned in terms of damage to the facility and things like that. It's Florida. They know how to build equipment and build facilities with high wind and rains and things like that in mind. My big fear was that that hurricane pushed right up into the bay, it would disrupt those channels and they have to go do a bunch of work to dredge them out, and you wouldn't be able to move product for a while. And you'd see a couple week disruption from that point. So that's one major point we always watch. The second being the mouth of the Mississippi River, NOLA, New Orleans, Louisiana. If you have another one that impacts there, and we saw that how many years ago, it ran straight up there. And it destroyed grain facilities, and it destroyed ports, and it messed up the river channels, and it hurt barges. And that, so those are the two main points. Whenever you see it, Houston, to a lesser extent, is a third point that we would add into there. But Tampa and NOLA are the two biggest points we'd watch from a hurricane point of view.
Let's get into NOLA then. They're dealing with an issue right now of low water. That is a longer tail event, not a storm that comes in 3 days, there for a day, out in four.
Yeah.
What's the long-term tail of low river levels on the Mississippi in the fertilizer industry?
Yeah, it's funny. We're repeating this after only a year ago. Last year was the exact same story. Low river levels, what are we going to do? We got to spring. All of a sudden, it was flooding in the Mississippi. And here we are. We're right back to low waters again. And the story is, it's going to disrupt traffic. And this is probably more of a grain situation today with harvest going on, but obviously there's going to be a fertilizer impact. The fortunate part of it is these barge captains, the crews, the Army Corps of Engineers, the dredging operation, these crews do a phenomenal job. They have done a phenomenal job. They continue to do a phenomenal job of doing everything they possibly can to keep these channels open. And you see it every single day, especially now. But what the impact is today is, let's say you can typically take 16 barges on a tow. Well, maybe you only take 8. If you can typically take 1,600 ton per barge, maybe you can only take 13. So all of a sudden you start to see where these rounds are just a little bit more efficient. And yeah, there's going to be a little bit of an additional cost because those guys all got to make their money. But it's that ability to move product from point A to point B in a timely fashion. We're more inefficient today than where we were.
Because the stories that I'm reading or seeing that hit more of the mainstream say, oh, well, yes, grain going down, but it's the fertilizer. And then the big one now is the salt that's going to be used on your road that comes up. Because you don't send a barge empty in either direction if you can help it. So is that a little bit misleading on the fertilizer is greatly impacted?
It is greatly impacted, and it's going to be more so on the phosphate and the nitrogen side, just because those are two products that are more reliant on the barge system. Your potash, because it comes from Canada, because it's coming from Carlsbad, New Mexico, places like that, it's much more rail dependent. There's a little bit that moves by barge, but it's not nearly as big a percentage. Nitrogen is going to be okay-ish from the standpoint that we've got a lot of production throughout the Midwest. It's more reliant on truck and rail. However, when we... The biggest one that I'm watching right now, it's phosphate. Number one, that fall application season is less than 30 days away. And number two, all that product is produced in Florida. There's some that hits the East Coast by rail, but a lot of that gets barged through the Gulf of Mexico and then up through the mouth of the Mississippi.
So that is going to be absolutely, because time is critical. There was a little bit of rain last weekend, but that's not going to filter in and raise the levels. It doesn't hurt. But it certainly doesn't help. And again, that long-term tail is going to be felt. Okay, you've mentioned several products. Let's do a quick outlook on each. I think you've said there's been a relaxation in volatility, But is there still a and to an extent price? Is there one market? Which one do you want to start with? You want to start with phosphate?
Yeah, we can start with phosphate. He's done significantly less price work versus its highs back in April of 22. I actually ran these numbers here a week or two ago, and I looked at the percentage drop from its high to where we were. And where we had seen nitrogen down, I think it was 55, 60%. Potash was down about the same percentage. Phosphate was really only down 35 to 45%. And a lot of that has to do with the inability to access three of the biggest exporters of phosphate in the world. Now, there are challenges to the case against Morocco, and hopefully that will open up a lot more product to flow here, but that's not the case today.
So what's the 3 to 6 month outlook? Am I into the position of locking in or deferring some of this, playing the market for a few months?
If you are a person who is looking at phosphate and saying, I am absolutely going to go this fall, I think your time's run out. We've got 30 days before we start to hit the fields. What is in place is largely what is going to be in place. We've got logistical issues. We've got tight supplies out there. If you want to guarantee the product is going to be sitting there, the highest degree of certainty, go talk to your retailer today. For the longer term, there might be some more chance that these things start to scale off. We've got challenges on the Moroccan countervailing duty case, which could start to affect the price ideas. But again, that's a little bit of a flip in the coin, but there's at least more time on our side there.
Let's move to nitrogen. What's the story there? What's the headline?
Well, it's you break it down to three cycles of or three versions of nitrogen. When we look at anhydrous, we've only really got fall prices accessible to us, and we still see them very aggressive. We're expecting a major fall application demand run for anhydrous. The price looks phenomenal versus grains, urea, UAN, historical values. Here recently, everything about anhydrous looks pretty good. I can tell you, I told my dad to go ahead and buy it, so I better be right on this one.
Otherwise, you're going to find somewhere for Thanksgiving to go.
That's right. And if I miss a meal, I'm going to get very, very upset.
When it comes to, okay, but I know this isn't necessarily directly. There's other people at StoneX that help you and you help them with information. We're already looking ahead. I'm already getting questions about 24 acres. You're making a decision to plant corn or beans now if you're applying anhydrous. So you're anticipating more fall application, henceforth, more corn acres, right? Or am I reading too far down into the book?
We are forecasting right now in our demand models, we are using 92 million acres of corn and 88 million acres of beans next year. Now, that is actually a little bit less corn acres than what we did this year. However, last year, anhydrous was a little bit overvalued, and we didn't quite know there was going to be 94 billion acres, right? We didn't lead into the season thinking it was going to be that much. But as we look at it, we actually think that anhydrous is going to take more of the overall nitrogen demand, assuming Mother Nature allows it to get out there, because it has been so well priced.
Interesting. So that is part of the factor, not necessarily the price that's going to be achieved with a sale of a bushel of corn.
Yeah. Nitrogen's always interesting because not only do you got to figure out what is your overall nitrogen demand look like, well, now you've got to start sitting there saying, well, how much of the pie does anhydrous get? What does urea get? What does UAN get? And those numbers change all the time, because right now we're forecasting that fall anhydrous is going to be great. It's going to be 2.15 million tons applied. Well, what happens if it's November 1st and it finally starts raining? That's great for the Mississippi River. That's terrible for anhydrous application. And what else falls in snap freeze? And we can't run toolbars anymore.
Well, I guess I'm going to kind of throw a little wrench into that thinking. Is we've been so dry, I cannot remember the last time we've had this much corn and beans out before we've even hit October, Josh. So does that thinking have to change a little?
It might. There are some areas that we're watching. In fact, we're doing a quarterly webinar here this afternoon, and we've got a drought map up on every single one of the products. Anhydrous, that's a very, very big deal, because I'm talking about, what if it's too wet? What if it's too cold? Well, most of the farmers will sit there and say, yeah, why don't you go out there, smart aleck, and try and apply anhydrous when it's too dry? You're going to have a pretty little a fog in that field, because nothing is going to seal. It's not going to take.
Right. It's a waste. And I've heard that discussion before, and that's happened. And so you have to have that factor in. So now enter in a little case of volatility, right?
Yes. Yep. The expectation is it's going to be major demand. But if any of those three situations pop up and it hurts demand, now all of a sudden we go into Christmas saying, well, anhydrous short. What does spring look like now? What does anhydrous capture? What does urea capture? What does you? That's why it makes it such a difficult market on the nitrogen side to figure out what's going to happen.
So I get the sense, Josh, that your and my Thanksgiving discussions are always different than the Christmas because so much changes in those family chats about people. And it sounds like this will be the same this year.
Yeah, that's one thing I like about fertilizer. If somebody can come up to me and sit there and say, well, Josh, you were wrong at this point of view. Well, the market changed. It wasn't me. It was the market.
All right. Let's look at urea. What do you see as the headline there?
We're expecting a little bit of a pop. And actually, since we've been talking, I've had a couple alerts come through. It looks like India is getting ready to step back into the market for another purchase tender. When you take their demand stepping forward with the fact that China is sitting there restricting exports, this should have a little bit of a bullish event. But longer term, we're struggling with the price idea. We feel like the global S&D is relatively normal. Prices today are not normal. Any farmer out there will tell you it's still too high priced. So we're really questioning what later Q4, Q1 looks like. We're a little bit afraid we're going to get into the pattern of last year where we spike early. Maybe we do that death by 1,000 cuts on the price through winter. Nobody wants to bring product in. All of a sudden we get to spring and everybody's looking around saying, where's my product? Sorry, everybody's scared to death. Nobody wanted to bring it into the country. We're short. We're tight.
Oh, and then there goes the price spike. And no, you were at it again. It wasn't the market. It was Josh this time.
That's right. That's right. No, the market's changed. Remember, I just said that.
Do you see, okay, you've mentioned India a couple of times. It used to always be, and I've kind of discussed this on market a little bit. India's more of a discussion point than it used to be. Or am I just because I wasn't listening before?
They are a bigger discussion point because of the price finding ability of the way India does it. So in India, for anybody that might not know, most of the countries will just buy product and nobody says a word about it. In India, in order to make sure that everything is on the up and up, they call a tender and whoever wants to participate sends in an offer. And at the end of the process, they will show every offer, every ton, every single number has to negotiate down to the lowest West Coast and East Coast price. It's a fantastic snapshot of the marketplace. Now, in the past, that system worked really, really well. That was a situation where they were buying a lot of tons. You get a discount for that, and you find out what kind of a discount is available out there. Well, today, that system is actually working against them. When they're out there buying a million ton, the world is much more of a tight S&D. So now all of a sudden, you see prices rally. So it's a little bit of a, how much will the price react to it? And then at the end, what are the actual prices? Who's willing to undercut the market to make sure they get to sell? So it's a great, open, and honest way of finding out where's the market right this second. It's a new starting point.
Are you saying that not all markets are that way?
It might come as a shock, but yes.
Sorry, that was too easy. Okay.
Hey, you're just saying what we all think.
Right. That's what you're supposed to do. I'm not supposed to say that. Yeah. I'm supposed to set you up to say that, Josh. What do you see? What other fertilizer markets should we be paying attention to?
Phosphate's still got a lot of volatility in front of it. Phosphate's going to hinge a lot on the import-export situation. It's going to have an impact on what the demand looks like this fall. You know, like I said, we dodged a couple bullets globally. There's still some things we need to watch there. I don't think volatility's done for phosphate. Potash feels pretty good. We feel like the price has done a tremendous amount of work to drop. I think that the manufacturers did a great job with their summer fill programs. We've seen a little bit of appreciation, but nothing to the extent of what we've seen on phosphate nitrogens. Potash actually, for me, is the one I feel the most comfortable about. I think it feels comfortable. I think we'll see a little bit of appreciation going into the fall, but that probably has more to do with logistics than it does the actual price. But potash is a very slow-moving, methodical beast. Sometimes can take months, years for a price cycle to complete. And right now, it's just kind of sitting sideways.
I guess I'll ask one more weather question. When you see areas come out of drought that traditionally are in drought, I'm thinking of areas south of you and west of you that have emerged, and then the areas around me that are in drought and don't look anywhere close to emerging. Does that have any influence on what you do?
Absolutely. And it's having the conversations with our clientele in those areas, it gets very difficult because put yourself, obviously a lot of folks are listening in from a farmer's perspective. It's hot, it's dry. What's your approach to it? I'm not putting anything on this ground. I'm not going to plant anything. If there's no moisture, it's stupid. I'm not going to spend the money. So your feedback to the retailer, I'm not going to buy. I'm not going to buy. I'm not going to buy. What happens when the first rain comes through? Well, I need to buy. Retailers sitting there saying, you sat there and said you weren't going to need anything. Every farmer in the area was saying, you weren't going to need anything. I wasn't going to take that price risk. So now all of a sudden, demand goes from zero to 100 mile an hour in a matter of a couple hours when a rainstorm comes through. So that's, and all of a sudden you start trying to figure out those regions. You can have an overall market that's falling through the floor. But if that region is sitting there desperate for whatever it can get its hands on, that number can actually start to rise. And those are the little opportunities or the risks that we look for.
So in that sense, we're back to the discussion of where the hurricane goes versus where the Mississippi River goes. We're now a lot closer than what you initially would have thought. At least that's what I think you're trying to tell me.
Yes.
Okay. A couple of very important things to close with. Does Kansas beat Kansas State this year in football?
No.
No?
I'm a Missouri guy. Ooh. I don't ever want Kansas to win a single football game.
Well, but Mizzou and KU played this year, right?
K-State. Missouri.
Oh, it was K-State?
That's right. Listen,
that's it.
We're okay with K-State. We don't like K-State. K-State doesn't like us, but we share the common interest of not liking KU.
Okay. Fair enough. Fair enough. Everybody dislikes KU. Yeah. And the last important question in your region is... did you see Taylor Swift somewhere this weekend? Anywhere? Did she come to the Missouri side? Did she come to the Kansas side? Supposedly she was in Lawrence. Is she touring around your neighborhood right now?
The rumors were that she and Travis actually had dinner very close to her office. We sit next to a decent little area, and they supposedly rented out a restaurant very close to where we work. So if I'd actually spent some time in the office, I might have seen them. Maybe I want to go over and have a beer with them, but I missed out.
Well, and now you miss out on actual work when I ask a ridiculous question. But that's why, Josh, it's fun to have these chats.
Absolutely. Listen, you know, next time they were reaching out saying, Josh, what's your thoughts on fertilizer? I was like, listen, Travis, you know, Taylor, I've got things to do.
Yeah, right. I could easily put in a line right now and just say, shake it off, but I won't. Josh Linville from StoneX, always good to chat. Thank you so much for the time. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me on, bud.
Thank you for watching this installment of the MTOM Show podcast. New episodes each and every Tuesday. We'll see you next time. Thank you.